Hello, this is Dan Lebatard. Welcome to South Beach Sessions. Today we catch up with an old friend, Ricky Williams, former Heisman Trophy winner. I've told you before how interesting I find this guy. Long time ago, his Heisman Trophy was in my father's garage for several years because he was in Australia having quit football. I've told you before that he's always been an artist sort of amid an army's rigidities. And so I found him fascinating as a philosopher, poet, as a guy who thinks deeply, who lives big. I don't need to introduce you more to Ricky Williams. I love the dude. I've said that before, and I tell him as well. I want to tell you that South Beach Sessions is presented by ZipRecruiter, and now we need to catch up with our old friend Ricky Williams. So this is legitimately one of the most fascinating people I've ever met, not just in sports, but across everyone I've ever met, any walk of life. He's always searching. He's an incredibly spiritual being, and he's searching in the smoke, in the stars. He's praying to Mecca. He's, he is studying Chinese medicine, yoga, all of it. Like, he has really searched the globe trying to find the answers to life. And Ricky Williams is someone that I have known for a long time, admired for a long time, but admired that about him for a long time. So where would you, Ricky, place on your list of things that are interesting about you football?
Well, I think it depends. If you're taking like a look from far out and you're saying, oh, look, there's a football player, then it's not that interesting. But I think as a football player, the way I approach football, the way I thought about it, I think that's interesting.
How about for you, though, in terms of the importance? Because you studied that craft, you applied yourself with maximum effort to that craft, but I always thought that craft was something that sort of got in the way of life's bigger pursuits for you.
Well, yeah, I think of football and what I learned as a football player, as I think well said, is a craft. And I think, one of the main crafts you learn as a football player is how to overcome adversity, how to overcome your own fear, how to overcome the idea of being intimidated by something. And that's a skill that I'm very grateful I developed and I've been able to use. But football as a life, that's too stressful for me, even now watching my youngest son Elijah play flag football, it's like PTSD.
I remember standing not that long ago on a sideline of a Dolphin game with you, and you're looking out there and you're like, what the hell was I doing? Like, I never measured consequences. Warriors can't measure consequences. Otherwise you wouldn't be a warrior.
Like I said, I think it's wonderful to because it taught me courage. But there's a certain point where you learn the lesson and you move on to use it in other areas of your life. So that's the way I frame my time and my experience as a football player. And the positive side is I got to make a lot of people happy. You got to piss off a lot of people. Got to make a little bit of money to fund my adventures. And so that's the way I look at it.
Well, tell the people who don't know about your adventures, because they've been pretty plentiful and they've gone to, they've gone to some extreme places on the search where a lot of people go looking for God, for answers, for just the solving of mysteries. Can you sort of explain to people along the path? So, I mean, it's a broad question. Some of the things you've studied.
First of all, I take offense to the use of the word extreme because it's relative, So meaning if someone, and I'm just that kind of person where when I get an idea, I become extremely curious about that idea. And so I typically pursue it until I find an answer.
You can't get offended by extreme, Ricky, and then say you get extremely curious. You're not allowed to say that you're extreme about your curiosity and then be offended that I called it extreme.
Well, let me explain why. Because it's a relative term. So to you, maybe something might seem extreme, but to me, it doesn't seem that extreme. For me, almost, and we've had versions of this conversation 100 times. Like, I think, I won't say it. But some of the things you do, I would consider extreme, where you would consider is quite normal. That's what I take offense to, because it's a relative term.
Okay, forgive the offense then, instead of barking with you about the semantics of extremity. So forgive the offense.
It's not semantic. It's not semantic.
Okay, I'm just an asshole then. You're right. All right? You're right. I shouldn't have said extreme. There are many better words I could have used than extreme. So, but can you explain to people?
Especially with your vocabulary.
You're right. Look, I can't dispute what you're saying because it's a pejorative sort of word. And I think you know this. I don't actually view what you've done as pejorative. I think it's admirable. I think a lot of people don't do stuff like that. I wish that I had the courage to do some of it. So can you tell the people what it is you're talking about, though? Like whether we're talking about the studying of Chinese medicine, whether we're talking about the study of astrology, whether we're talking about the search through Ayurveda, like massage therapy, yoga. Like what are we talking about?
Yeah, all that stuff. And like I said, it comes from, you know, I get a massage and I have an experience that I'm like, wow, this really helped in ways I don't understand. And so I become curious about understanding why did massage work? And then I get acupuncture and it blows my mind that I feel so much better. And then I become curious about how did acupuncture work? And then I get an astrological reading and it blows my mind. Then I become curious of how does this work? And so I think I'm curious and searching for things that work, things that improve the quality of my life. And so, and just that improve the quality of life in general and provide more clarity. And so anytime I get a whiff of anything that provides that for me, then I become passionate about getting to the bottom of it.
What are you most passionate about in that realm today? Is it astrology or is it something else?
Well, I think now I've moved into, I feel like I've not learned everything, but I have a strong foundation. And so now my passion is into finding ways to share what I've learned. And so astrology is probably what I've invested the most time into. And I'm working on a relationship app that takes what I understand about astrology and applies it in a way that people can actually use it in their daily lives. And so that's really my passion now I've lived and studied and had all these experiences, but if they're just for my enjoyment, they run out of meaning. And if I can share with other people, you know, whatever I've learned that can be useful, then I feel like that's what's giving my life meaning right now.
What do you say to the person who treats astrology like horoscopes or pseudoscience as opposed to the feeling of learning about the universe?
It's the same way I would treat someone who said that they didn't like football. You know, I've found that everyone who's really taken time to watch a football game and understand the rules and how it works, they fall in love with it. And it's the same thing with astrology. Anyone that opens their mind long enough to dabble in it and to get a sense of what it can and can't do becomes fascinated. Because I think, you know, there's an existential crisis, you know, that's going on in the world. And it's so cliche because it's so real. And for the most part, you know, we don't really have a basis of meaning of how to create meaning in the world. You know, for so many years, for thousands of years, we had religion. And now that, you know, religion's not cool anymore, people are searching for meaning. And I found that astrology gives us a way to locate meaning in our everyday lives. That's powerful.
How did you find serenity? How did you find, because I imagine that right now would be the time in your life when you've had most peace of mind, no?
Yeah, well, it's a process. But it's funny, it all started when I received my first astrological reading. And I was talking to this woman, and this was, you know, in the midst of the chaos of my life. You know, it was right after I left the Dolphins in 2004, and I'm having this conversation with this woman. And you're going to laugh because I'm sure you were privy to this, but it was news to me. And she pointed out to me that so much of my life was dedicated to creating, like, stress. And when she said it, I started thinking about it, and at first it surprised me that idea had never really dawned on me, that I had just accepted stress as part of my identity, that I didn't even notice that how I was living a life that was just moving towards stress. And so in that moment, I realized, okay, this is something that I want to change. And so I consciously at that moment started moving towards more serenity and realized that this, it was a habit, you know, a habit of being in a stressful situation. And so becoming conscious of that and then doing something about it, I started to move more and more towards serenity.
How did you happen upon meditation? How did you realize that your mind needed quieting?
You know, it's funny. The thought of meditation, before I'd ever really meditated, it was probably 2003. I was playing for the Dolphins, and I just had this feeling of life where my life was moving way too fast for me. Like, it had taken over, and I was just waking up in the morning trying to play catch-up to my life. And the thought that popped into my mind was, I wish if I only had a couple of minutes every morning to just relax and let everything go and find myself, it would be great. And, you know, within a year of that thought, I found myself in India, you know, spending hours getting myself together and finding myself in my life. I really think that whatever in life you truly seek for, if you really ask for it and move towards it, it shows up.
Is God there? Did you feel God in the serenity of, you know, looking inside yourself, seeing yourself and being at peace or loving yourself, your soul, because we are only that moment, right? Like this is going toward a place that's a little bit elaborate to explain, but did you find God there?
Well, you know, God's a tricky word. And so the way I'd like to think about it is I recognized. Because, you know, we can talk about God and we can think about God, but this experience that we're talking about, it's an experience. And so what I will say is I recognize and I found a connection to something greater than just myself. And in that connection, I could experience and see how I was connected to everyone and everything else around me. And I think that would be my definition of God, is that sense of connection.
When do you feel it most? When is it most present?
I feel it most present when I'm talking to someone about their astrological chart, because I'm looking at a computer screen or a two-dimensional image of a circle with a bunch of symbols in it, and I'm having a conversation with another being, and through the symbolism and the conversation, that there's like, you know, it evokes this feeling of connection. Where I'm talking about symbols and I'm saying, and I'm putting the words together in a way that connects to someone's experience and helps that person connect to, you know, how something that's going on in their relationship is connected to something larger. And so this, you know, what I get to do with people on a daily basis is tap in and help them tap into how they're connected to everything going on. So at a time like this, when there's so much confusion and chaos and going on in the world, people need to have meaning. It's like we can suffer anything if we understand the purpose of it. But when there's just confusion and chaos and there's no meaning to it, that's hell.
Does that singular connection represent joy?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, my definition of joy isn't that, you know, you're happy when everything is going well. My definition of joy is this sense, this at-oneness, where you don't always like and agree with what's going on, but you have this sense of how it fits in the larger scheme of things.
I don't think the audience knows, and part of this is on me because I call it something like extreme, but what I'm trying to show the audience is the depths, because you're such an extraordinarily willful person, the depths that your passion will take you to, because you basically apply to the things that made you great at football, you will shift it and then apply it to Chinese medicine, to acupuncture, to yoga, and to meditation, and now to astrology. That's fair to say, right? Like, once you pour yourself in, maybe even more so, given that football wasn't quite the curiosity that these things are. You, at one point, you mastered football.
Yeah, more or less. But again, I think, you know, the first thing that, even before we learn to use our minds, the first thing we learn to use is our bodies. And so the same ideology behind you know, why yoga is a spiritual thing, it relates to football. As you learn to master your body, you have training to start to learn to master your mind. And so I look at my training in football as specifically preparing me to study meditation and to study Chinese medicine and to study these things. I don't see them as separate. Although I did, because, you know, I didn't have any examples of, when football is training you to be something different. You know, I bought into the idea that football, that's it. You know, football, then I'm bronze in the Hall of Fame and I live forever.
you never took painkillers, right? Like, so you were of this mentality, sort of overcoming pain and adversity. You were somebody who was about that even while dabbling in the most challenging of painful things, which is carrying the ball 40 times on a Sunday for Wanstead.
Well, I took painkillers because that's what I thought I was supposed to do. But one day I was sitting in the training room and I was watching guys come into the training room one by one to get their Toradol shot for practice. And I started thinking, like, if we keep doing this for our careers, like, what, this is going to have long-term effects. And so I started to experiment. I set a challenge for myself. To how long can I go in the season without having to take any pain medicine? And I found, you know, stretching and breathing and other things. I found other ways to take care of massage, acupuncture, other ways to take care of my body. And again, it led me down this road of getting into studying a lot of things that most football players don't look into.
It's probably some of what Brady's doing, right? Because have you reversed some of the effects of aging through yoga, meditation, acupuncture, moving around the energies, moving around the fascia?
Yes, for sure, no doubt about it. And I guarantee it's what Tom Brady's doing, and it's what James Harrison did. It's the only way to play for a long time in the NFL. And I think, you know, the players that wise up realize that I'm doing a lot of intense damage to my body. In order to reverse this, I need to do a lot of intense repair, healing, recovery work.
And so where is that this morning? Like, you get out of bed because your body has always been an amazing machine, but because you damaged that body, do you feel ready to attack the morning physically? Because of all the things you're doing in terms of healing.
It's real. So, you know, and I'm sure you can attest to this. As you get older, the only thing that really changes is your body is less forgiving. And so, I know that when I was younger, I could eat like crap for 2 weeks and, you know, still be fine. And now if I eat poorly for 2 days, I feel the effects. And so it's really, you know, lifestyle management and all the things I've studied and learned. I have so many tools, and so, yeah, in my best days, I get up, I do some sun salutations and breathing exercises, and I meditate. And when I do that on those days, I feel great. If I am traveling a lot or I'm too stressed about something else and I don't do that, then I feel like crap. And then I remember, this is how I feel better. And so that's really what you learn in spiritual practice is it works, but you have to practice it.
You remember how your hero, Earl Campbell, walked early in life, right? Like, you did that strike you at the time, given that you had such similar running styles?
Of course. I think, you know, of course it did not. You know, I think you said it earlier, when you're the warrior, you can't really think about consequences, or at least I believe that. And I think we've had this conversation, you know, if you are stuck with this idea that, you know, 99.9% of professional football players experience some kind of brain damage. Okay. If you think like that, like it's you either have to deny it or it's hopeless and you have to be depressed. And so, you know, the way I got out of it is I realized, and I truly believe, meditation, craniosacral therapy, all the things that acupuncture, all the things that I have done are something that I can actually do about the brain damage. But you know, it's, you have to have the courage to acknowledge it. And some days, you know, like I'll have a flare up, like this week, my elbow flared up a little bit. And, you know, so for maybe 4 or 5 days, I have to slow down, you know, get some acupuncture, pay a little extra attention to whatever is flaring up and deal with it. And so I think I just have to be vigilant about what's going on with my body and use what I've learned to help myself feel better.
But it's not nearly as bad as any of us would have imagined, given how you had to play, right? Like, it sounds like grading on a football curve, you're feeling pretty damn healthy.
Yes, for now. But who knows? And that's why I'm saying all I can do is keep taking care of myself. And I think whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever, football, sports, when you live hard, young, you know, all it means is you have to do a better job of taking care of yourself as you get older.
You mentioned the idea of stress. How much better are you at managing it now? Because I don't think of you as a stressful creature.
I think I do. I think I do a great job of managing it. But I think most importantly, I do a better job of not creating undue stress. You know, I can appreciate the kind of stress of, you know, I have a speaking engagement or I have to create some content for the app and there's a deadline. I can appreciate the kind of stress that helps me step up. But that extra stress from not managing relationship expectations, mainly that was my big thing. I've just been more comfortable with myself and so I don't create as much undue stress. And I think that's been really the key difference for me.
Well, when did some of that start happening most for you in terms of knowing yourself? Like what age were you? Where do you look at as the period of introspection where you were like, oh, okay, I'm now becoming self-aware and now I can apply self-love to some of these situations where I'm damaged?
Yeah, it was the year I took off, 2004. That's pretty much what I spent the whole year doing. And it's been a process since that point, and I feel like every year I've become more clear and grown up and become more mature. But I'd say the major kind of wake-up call was my marriage and realizing that the dynamic in the marriage, just the natural nature of the marriage, was stress-inducing pretty much for everyone involved. And so, you know, getting clear and working through that, I think, was major, because I took this major stress-creating mechanism in my life and I addressed that, and so it wasn't, I just imagine this machine that's just pumping out stress all the time, and I think dealing with that has made my life so much more peaceful. Because the thing about stress is it consumes energy, and so cutting out these stressful elements of my life, I have more energy to devote to things that are more important to me and that are more productive.
Is there a way to even articulate to people how stressful football is and how stressful your life was at the height of all the insanity?
No, I don't think someone could appreciate it or understand it, because it's stressful on so many levels. You know, first and foremost, there's primal stress, because, you know, there's someone trying to take your head off. There's someone trying to take your head off.
Because that's Ted Washington over there. Like that, it's the primal stress of that's Ted Washington, and why does he run almost as fast as I do?
I'm telling you. So there's that deep stress, and it's little, and it doesn't seem like a big deal, but I guarantee all football players, you know, similar to flight attendants and pilots, they have that dream where they oversleep, you know, and just that looming over your head that it's a big deal if you make one little mistake, you know, that's off the field and that's on the field. And that's just really stressful. And then dealing with injuries. I say the hardest thing about being a professional athlete is dealing with injuries, because, you know, it's connected to your livelihood. It's connected to your physical body. It's connected to your mood. It's connected to your source of feeling connected to the team, to the group, you know, and so extremely stressful, but, you know, it has the ability to either make you or break you.
But that's not even counting all of the stuff that you're not prepared for, right? That's off the field, just all of it, whatever that looks like. I'm not even talking about that. We're just talking about the stresses of the job there.
Exactly. Yeah. Fame is a whole nother fame. Yeah. It's a whole nother issue. It's a whole nother issue. And then also the stress of, because not all of us, but for most of us, when we become professional athletes, you know, we bump up a couple socioeconomic classes. And so like this the stress of managing all of those things that a lot of us are not prepared to deal with.
In retrospect, having lived it, how do you feel about fame? Like, would you have liked to have turned the volume down a great deal, or did you need that Bunsen burner so that you could speed up your growing up process?
Yeah, I needed the Bunsen burner. And you know, the truth is, if it was easier, I would have been bored and probably created some kind of drama in some other area of my life. So, yeah, for me personally, it was exactly what I needed to become the person I am today. you know, I just hope that we move in a direction as humanity, as a group, as a collective, that we're more forgiving and understanding that we're actually here on this planet to grow and to evolve.
When you look back at sort of who you were and how that growing up process ended up happening for you, are there lamp posts or landmarks for you on exactly where it is that you learned, whatever it is that you needed to learn so that you could be open-minded to the idea of, I could find answers about myself in the stars. I can learn things here that are greater than me, greater than humanity, greater than time on earth that has to do with the soul and the spirit.
Yeah. And you know, it's easy in retrospect, really easy. It's easy to look back at, you know, when I was 6 years old, sitting in church with my mom, and I was enthralled, you know, listening to the stories about Jesus and miracles and all this stuff. And I can, you know, looking back, I can trace the path, you know, where I took a left turn, where maybe a right turn would have been more honoring of my past. And then recognizing the, you know, the windy path to get back on my path. And so a lot of signposts. And I think with the astrology as a tool, it makes it easy to go back and refresh and see, you know, where I had major learning moments. And I think my most significant learning moment is a lesson I think that we're all learning is how to think for ourselves and how to care less about what other people think, you know, so that we can actually hear our own quiet voice. And I think the situation when I retired from the Dolphins and traveled around the world, that it was something that I needed to do, and to be able to come back and finish my career in the NFL and, you know, reach 10,000 yards and get some resolution to the whole thing. It validates for me the journey.
How freeing was it to escape the shackles of caring what others thought?
Oh my God. It was so freeing. It was so freeing. And I think what was most freeing about it is I realized that beyond other people's opinions is that each of us have actually really unique, interesting perspectives, but they stay buried under, you know, the need to fit in and play certain roles. And so it was not only freeing, but after it was free, there was so much inspiration and clarity about where I was going in my life.
Can you explain to me, because I haven't asked you about this sort of, and this, I know astrology is super broad, but just a couple of the things that the stars told you about yourself, then you were like, oh, okay, that makes so much sense. Or I get, okay, I'm that. Yes, I am that. Where you had, it hadn't dawned on you before the study of, you know, the stars helped you find it.
So when I talk to people and I explain what astrology is, and I say, you know, really, when I talk to someone, probably 95% of what I say to people, they already know, but they just know because it's that small little voice inside that they don't really share with anyone. And so an example is astrology says the language we use is I'm a Gemini. Okay. And so Gemini is really about curiosity. The sun was in Gemini when I was born. So the sun is about vitality. And so the sun in Gemini means that I get vitality from pursuing my curiosity. Okay. Like that's primal in my life. Okay. Even over having security or accomplishments in the world, which is things that are typically valued by our culture. Okay. And this really is the core of it, is each of us are conditioned, right? We're conditioned by living in this day and age. We're conditioned by our gender. We're conditioned by the lineage of our family, right? We have all these things that condition us. But underneath that, there's something that's more true and real to who we are as an individual soul, if you will. And so what astrology does is it feeds that unique vision of who we are to help us become that in the midst of our conditioning. And so as an African, it's a great example, right? As growing up, and we've talked about this before, growing up as an African-American male in my community, like, I was interested in school, my curiosity, learning, Gemini stuff. But, you know, in my neighborhood, you weren't supposed to be smart if you were Black. And so, you know, that was part of myself that I had to dumb down, you know, that I got beat up when I asked questions in class. And so I had to learn to, like, tap down my Gemini and focus it into being a good athlete. And so, you know, as I learned more astrology and realized that, oh, I'm supposed to be curious and I'm supposed to be traveling around the world trying to understand the way the world works. That felt more real to me than I'm supposed to be running a football up and down a field scoring touchdowns. And so it gave me permission, if you will, to be myself instead of what I've been conditioned to be.
You are featured in a BET documentary, Smoke, Marijuana, and Black America, and it examines marijuana's cultural, social, economic impact, and specifically on the Black community. What did you find interesting about the conversations they were having with you there as it relates to the Black community?
So, and, you know, my section, we were talking about sports, and in the conversation, you know, during the taping of the doc, and I think it's going to be in there, we brought up that 60 Minutes interview with me and Mike Wallace. I think that really represents so much of what this doc is about. And especially when you know, going back and watching it, the way that Mike Wallace approached me, you know, because the point of view at this time was, you know, he was the old established white man, you know, talking down to the athlete who gave up everything. And he put me on the spot. And in that moment, I had to choose, am I going to side with his version of the story that I'm a bad person and I shouldn't be doing this and lie about it? Or am I going to take more ownership of my experience, even though I didn't really understand what was going on? And you could see on my face that, you know, that I was kind of stuck in between this moment, but I was on the spot. And I ended up saying that, you know, acknowledging that, yes, I am still smoking. And so, you know, really, and this is our story, you know, and so much of history is told by, you know, the white man, and it excludes minority voices and it excludes female voices. And so I think the point of this doc is to tell our side of the story and to empower African Americans, really empower everyone to own their version of their experiences of life.
Did the documentary teach you anything or much that you did not know? I'm assuming you've seen it. Perhaps you have not.
Yeah, I got to screen it early. I think they just did a really good job of weaving a story together. I think this is really the first time that a story has been told about cannabis that encapsulates many perspectives in the African American community.
In what ways has it helped you? Because early on, right, with something that was diagnosed as social anxiety disorder, you tried pharmaceuticals, I think Paxil. You were an endorser. Yes, you were an endorser for Paxil, correct? Which probably runs contrary. What you know now about yourself, that's probably not something that you would do, right? Because you would go organic almost in every instant, right?
Yeah, but, you know, Paxil was my gateway drug to really appreciating the value of cannabis. This is an interesting, and I spoke earlier about the existential crisis we're all going through, and I was in that same place looking for meaning. And I think what cannabis represents is you know, what scientists would call right brain functioning, you know, left brain being the logical, rational mind, you know, and that's really what controls at least the Western world, you know, is logic and reason. But there's a other side to life, our imagination, visionary experiences. And I think the symbol making, right, this is where we find meaning in our life. And I think one of the things that cannabis does is it activates that mode of functioning. And I think, you know, I can talk about this for hours. And so for me, it really gave me permission to access that part of myself. And that's something that I really needed. And I think we all need to have to function from both our logical, rational mind, but also our intuitive, imaginative functioning. And cannabis isn't the only way to do it. Meditation and journaling, there's so many ways to do it. But I think this is why cannabis is becoming so popular, is because the world is realizing we need to access this other part of ourselves.
Are you stunned to see what's happened on this front, even in the last 10 years?
Yeah, it's amazing. Just because of my lived experience of how demonized I was and how rigid people's perspective and how in a short amount of time changed. And, you know, I remember I was in Austin a couple of years back, and I got a call from my producer at Longhorn Network, and she said, you know, ESPN wants you to come in and talk about medicinal marijuana. And I was like, what? Well, they're going to pay me to go on television and talk about this? Okay.
The football world gives fulfillment so quickly, a reward so quickly and so big. I'm curious, where do you find that kind of fulfillment post the adrenaline of football? Because I guess it's different fulfillment, but what are the places that leave you feeling most fulfilled?
YouTube. I go back and watch old highlights. No.
You were so fast. You were so fast. You watched the Texas highlights or the Dolphins highlights. Which highlights? It's not the stuff running into the line with the Dolphins. It's the Texas highlights you go and watch on YouTube, isn't it?
Oh my God! You know, the people have been kind enough to create highlight films, and so I just peruse the highlight films. No, you know, I get it in life. You know, there's just certain little things in my life that I never thought I'd have that I do, and I appreciate those little things. And you know, my relationship with my first wife, my relationship with my current wife, my relationship with my kids, and waking up and having meaningful work to attend to each day. Because when I had all the football stuff, I was really, you know, doing quite poorly with all the other stuff. And so I think that's what people call balance.
You found it, yes? This is the most balanced you've ever been, no?
It's a process, you know, and I think it's more of my attitude is that when I wake up every morning, I'm clear on what the task is.
And that began when, would you say? Like, when, is that with your 40s? Did you arrive there late 30s?
It's gradual. You know, like I can't even say I've arrived. It feels like every day is a task to cultivate more and more of that. And, you know, again, football training for this is like when things come up in life, whether it's COVID or stressed out people or whatever it comes at me, I have confidence that I'm well equipped to be able to make the most of it. And so I engage right out into the field of battle to meet whatever life brings at me, for better or for worse. You talked about joy, and that's what I find joy. That's where I find joy.
You do well with chaos, correct? You have I don't know if I want to say a mastery of it, but like you rise above it a little bit.
This question makes me think of, I don't know if you saw Dave Chappelle's monologue on Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
But I think, and it's not across the board, and it is a stereotype, but I think it's a positive stereotype, is that African Americans and you know, other minorities, we don't have the expectation that everything is supposed to be a certain way. And so part of our training of growing up as minorities in this culture, as African Americans in this culture, is we've had to learn how to deal with chaos. And so, you know, I think I've been bred in many different ways to deal with chaos.
I've asked you some broad questions during this. I don't know that I've asked a broader one than this. Like, you make what of what's been happening in America over the last 12 months?
One term that I use a lot is probably a little insensitive, but it's a purge, you know? And it's similar to what I said. So I spend a lot of time studying depth psychology. Depth psychology is the idea that the main symbol we use is the iceberg, that the tip of the iceberg is what we're conscious of, and, you know, two-thirds, which is below the water, is what we're unconscious of. And the function of the unconscious is to keep us, to bring us back into balance. And so when chaos happens, right, another way to interpret that is chaos happens so that we can address certain things and move towards balance. And so I think a lot of things that have been buried and not dealt with in our culture, and this is a global thing. So in the world, you know, this is giving us an opportunity to bring these things to the surface so that we can deal with them, so that we can move forward in a way that more people can grow, more people can evolve, have the opportunity to thrive.
I can talk to this guy for hours about this stuff. I'd like to give the audience just a couple of morsels from football, because, you know, they're tired of hearing us yammering about the Stars. And, so a couple of questions from football. One, you told the great story once about the aforementioned Ted Washington spending a game where at the bottom of a pile, he just kept saying to you, I don't know if he was 330 pounds, hello, Ricky, and hello, Ricky, and hello, Ricky. And when did you realize, what quarter was it that you realized that he was just trying to say hello, that it wasn't trash talk, that he just wanted an acknowledgement from you that he knew you and that you knew it was him, Ted Washington?
Probably the third quarter.
So he really was, right? You were curious. You're like, man, that's the baddest trash talk I've ever heard. This guy is laying on me at the bottom of these piles, and he just keeps saying hello. And then you realize at some point, no, it's just, he just wanted to say hello.
Well, I didn't think it was trash talk. I just thought it was strange. because usually when you think of defensive linemen, you think of, you know, mean guys, but nicest, sweetest guy. He was just out there doing his job.
The other football story, I don't remember who the safety was, that I think it was Thanksgiving Day, where you were tired of watching him on film. Was it a Cowboy safety? Was it Roy Williams?
It was Roy Williams, yeah.
And so you want to tell the story or you want me to?
I like when you tell the story.
Okay, so he watches film all week, and he sees that Roy Williams likes punishing people and enjoys, is a bit of a bully, and Ricky does not abide bullies. So Ricky, was it in the open field? Like, you could have gone, you probably could have outrun him, but you went looking for him?
I came through the line, and he was right there. And then, you know, usually when you're running the ball, it's like all instincts. But I remember in that moment, I recognized. It's like RoboCop, you know, like my inner computer like honed in on him, and I said, okay, I'm going to give him something. And it was one of those statement plays, because, you know, a player like him, the defense rallies around him when he makes these big hits. And in the same vein, when someone, you know, goes after him, you know, puts the whole defense on their heels. And so I saw it as an opportunity to make a statement. And I think I got the best of him, but I separated my shoulder.
Wow, you separated your shoulder, but you got the best of him. I also like, and I've always said this about Ricky, he was sort of an artist in an army's rigidity. Tell me if I've got any part of this story wrong, where you were trying to find your voice as an adult, as a leader, and you were about to get up in front of the team and make a rallying speech, but then you realized, I can't trust these people with my vulnerabilities. And so you weren't actually able. Do I have this wrong, or do I have the details on this right? I don't remember what it is.
It's a repetitive story. There's probably three times. And, you know, the team was in a point in the season where we were letting an opportunity slip through our fingers. And I'd wake up in the morning, and in my mind, I'd have the whole speech all planned out. And I'd be thinking about, you know, when in the meeting am I going to interject, and walk on the stage and give my valiant speech. And in my head, you know, it was great, and everyone rallied around me and carried me out of the meeting room on their shoulders. But whenever it got to the moment to say something, I chickened out.
Every time you were 0-for-3, every time you chickened out?
Every single time.
It's so great. You've done so many brave things, and that's the thing you can't bring yourself to do. Were you ever, Jason Taylor tells some great stories about how people were afraid of Larry Chester because who was it that Jason Taylor said he threw a soda can at one time, hit him in the chest? I don't know whether it was Larry Chester or Daryl Gardner. Is there anyone that you found yourself a little bit afraid of?
Those two guys, actually, both of them, the first maybe 3 weeks I was around them. But after being around them, I saw that, you know, that they're a good dude.
Mike, go ahead and ask Ricky your question. I don't know why it is you want to ask this particular question.
Can you tell us about the Dave Wannstedt lobster trap week?
Weird question.
What a strange.
Maybe you could refresh my memory.
You were the team's leading rusher at the time, and you had a late season game at Minnesota, and it was considered a trap game because Minnesota wasn't very good. And to hammer this point home, Dave Wansett, your head coach, placed a bunch of traps along the facility, lobster traps and also mouse traps. He did mouse traps earlier in his career, but he decided to go bigger for this game against the Vikings. You ended up losing. I think Chris Carter dropped a pass in the end zone.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's still like that stretch of three games to end that season still haunts me. I don't remember the lobster trap. The one Dave Wansett story I do remember, though, is he was trying to tell us a story about overcoming adversity. And he was trying to talk about, he was trying to refer to FDR, who had polio, you know? Actually, I shouldn't tell the story because people are really.
Oh, come on.
So well, I don't want to get Ricky in trouble again.
There's no statute of limitations.
It was a really funny story.
Yeah, let's figure out a different way to end this. That's very kind of you. Very Buddhist of you. Way to go, Ricky. You're a grown man. You've learned some things. Don't embarrass poor Dave Wanstash. I'm sure it is a great story. I'm going to call you so I could hear it on the way home.
I would remember the lobster traps. Just saying.
What a crappy question by you. We've got
now we have to cut it out. We've got
a spiritual philosopher here. Well, he didn't finish the story. He stopped the story.
No, he had a better story, but it's just it's not a weird thing at all to walk into a locker room and have lobster traps hanging overhead. Must be just, you know, just week 17.
What a bad question by
you. I'm telling you, especially that late in the football season, like, you don't even notice what's going on.
You play week 17. It feels like your body is covered in lobster traps and mouse traps. Ricky, always good talking to you, buddy.
Actually, that end of that year, you know, was actually quite special. I remember Thanksgiving. I remember Christmas Eve, celebrating at the Levitard house with the big pig. It was good memories.
But no lobster trap, man.
No lobster traps. Enough with the lobster traps. Mike, how did you ruin this interview? We were doing so well, and then you got in there with your crappy lobster trap question.
Well, someone's going to give me an answer. I'm like a dog with a bone with this one.
I'm wrong.
No.
See you later, Ricky.
All right. See you.
Thanks to Ricky Williams. We will catch up with him again next week on South Beach Sessions. We will have a big boy. Big boy from Outkast will be on with us. That will be the final South Beach Sessions for ESPN. After the holidays, we will be back. You will get South Beach Sessions. All you have to do is keep your feeds where they are, and you will get all of this stuff in the same place. I would ask you that you please tell your friends, pass it around. Make sure everyone knows that they can get these things, South Beach Sessions. They could get Stupidity. They could get the radio show. These things are not going away after we leave ESPN. You who listen this way digitally will get it exactly the same way, but we need to get the word out now that everyone else has to download, subscribe, rate, and review, because we are going to fall off a cliff here on January 5th where we don't have access to ESPN television, ESPN platforms anymore, and we need you guys to rally around the support and make sure everyone knows on January 5th, if you still want content from us, that this is the place to get it. Make sure everyone you know ends up knowing that, because we've got a month before we can't tell you anymore on ESPN's platforms. Thank you. We will talk to you again next week with Big Boy of Outkast.